Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell and Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hi, everybody. This is Amity and Diane.
Hello.
For Design Oracles. Thanks for listening. We wanted to start this season off with something.
Yeah, we're so excited. Season 5.
Yeah, season 5. For season 5, we're going to talk about materiality. And the materials that make up our homes, the exterior, the interior, and how that affects everything from mood to acoustics to lighting. Subtitle of this one is Living in a Material World.
Yeah, I love it. I got really excited as we started to put together all our interviewees and then all the different materials we're going to talk about. I feel like we could do another whole season on materials because I don't know that we're covering everything that we possibly could, but we have a lot of really great people.
Yeah, I feel like our interviews have been educating me a lot on things I didn't know prior, and so a lot of material to discuss in this season.
Ha-ha. Yes, very good.
Full of jokes. Okay. Today I think we're going to talk about kind of hearkening back to the olden days and original building materials and kind of the history of building and what those materials were in the past. Right, Diane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to kind of talk about a quick definition of materiality, when you look it up, it says, you know, the quality or character of being material or composed of matter. And then, of course, there's all kinds of different other variations, like the architect-y one uses a whole bunch of great architect-y words. I don't even think I can pronounce them all. But basically, how great it is to use such wide variety of materials in all these different applications of building. And, you know, when we start thinking about some of the first structures that are built structures by man on Earth, the oldest one known is Stonehenge, which doesn't really cover you from the rain so much. I guess you could maybe hide under one of those stones. But, you know, that was made out of sarsen stones and blue stones, which actually came from southern England. And they still really have no idea how they got them to where they are because they are so incredibly heavy. And even how they lifted them up to then stand upon two other stones. I love going there. I've gone there numerous times. One of my favorite places to go. And some people are like, oh, it's just a bunch of rocks. But when you think about how they actually got it there, it's really incredible. And they're beautiful stones, too. And then, of course, the other older structures are the pyramids, which are made of granite and limestone and mortar. So here we are again, basically stone. We've got granite. So stone is probably one of our oldest building materials, I would say, when they first started figuring it out. And then started to get into brick. I mean, they started to figure out how to make brick.
And then adobe as well, mud. Building is also very historic. They would take grasses and mud and create homes out of it. Still happening today.
Yeah, definitely. And so is brick. Brick is like from like 10,000 BC. And there's all kinds of stuff with brick. So brick is actually made up of clay and sand, and then it's baked. And there's all kinds of different types of brick. So there's also, you know, back when they first started, that they were kind of handmade. And sometimes you pay extra to get some of these handmade bricks, which Amity and I just did a project where we have kind of a handmade brick, and it is so gorgeous.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Can't stop looking at it. And yes, you're right. Now, these days, it's standardized. All the brick making is standardized. Sizes. You can get different sizes.
And a gazillion sizes. It used to be they only had certain sizes. And then there's also, you know, there's paver bricks, which don't have the holes in it. And then there's the bricks that have the holes in it, which they started doing that in order to make it stronger when you laid the brick because you could put mortar through it. And then also sometimes add the steel, like if you needed to make the arches and the cased openings and going over windows and things like that. And then they also had something called a frog. Do you know what that is in a brick?
I do. I remember learning about that.
Yeah. So it's like a little indentation in the middle. It's only about 1 to 2 centimeters deep. And they did that to make the brick a little bit lighter to make it easier to build with. And then also maybe the brick manufacturer might put their name there.
Is that like scooping your bagel?
I kind of
think so. To cut calories?
Yeah.
Just popped into my head. I love that.
Yeah. And then, so we, you know, there's lots of brick. Brick is probably one of my favorites. There's just such a variety, and it's so based on the local sand that you're using. So it used to be you'd see different colors of brick in all the different regions, and you know that we'd see darker brick in certain areas because they had darker soil. It's kind of like if you've ever seen someone with a collection of sand, you know, from all the beaches they've been to in these glass bottles. It's so amazing to see all the different colors. And so when you think about the different types of brick and how they're made, because everyone was making, you can make brick anywhere. It's not special to one area. So they were using whatever that local sand was. And so that would be the color.
That's so interesting. Comes up a lot when we're looking at doing stone for houses. And maybe a client, I had a client once who was from the northeast, and they wanted a house that looked like a northeastern house, but we had trouble finding the stone locally down here in the west, in the southwest, mm-hmm. that would look like the houses there that we could get easily, you know, and she wanted Pennsylvania bluestone for the pavers and for the deck. And so that's interesting to think about. Sometimes it is, you go to different regions and you maybe will think to yourself, why does everything look the same? And it's based on the materiality of what's coming from the earth, what's mm-hmm. locally available.
And now stone definitely is completely relevant to the local area. Now with bricks, it's easy to get some of that sand shipped over, so it doesn't cost as much if you want like the darker colored brick and you're in an area where they make lighter colored brick. So it's much easier to get that. But when you're talking about the stone and shipping it from one area to another, yeah. I mean, it would be like someone, you know, in Seattle wanting limestone mm-hmm. from Texas. I mean, that would just cost a lot to ship. But yet here it's one of the cheapest stones you can get.
Right.
The white limestone. So, yeah, the stone is very based on local materials and, again, what the earth is made of, and that's what's producing all the stone. It's kind of – I went to a amazing granite quarry in Vermont one time, and that was just so incredible to see these massive walls of granite and cutting it. And also I was in Wales and seeing slate. I mean, it just literally falls off the mountain. You can just pick it up, and yet to get it over here costs a fortune. And that, of course, was one of the materials they used to use all the time for roofs. And so they're very
heavy.
Common in those areas.
It's not actually that heavy, is it? Is that very heavy?
It is
but
heavy.
But you can have a thin bit of it.
It's thin, but mm-hmm. you definitely have to design your roof structure to withhold that. It's kind of like clay tile roofs as well.
And that's a whole other thing that you get into. When you start talking about materials, building materials, you start thinking immediately about construction. So it'll be hard to keep on track with that, but I do want to bring up that when I was doing some research, I was looking at historic building materials, which brought me to historic modes of building. And I learned a little bit about log construction and then timber frame versus wood frame, which, Diane, I'm sure you had to learn about that in architecture school, all the different original ways of building. And then the types of lumber they used and the old growth forests that got all, you know, torn down and destroyed for building, which is up to a certain point. I think it's wood from 1850 to 1960 was kind of the end of the old growth forests. And so then there's a lot of discussion about when these older houses, and you're doing renovations on older houses, when you find, say, like in the studio I work in, it was built in 1901, they have, you know, 16-foot long flooring planks of pine that you couldn't get now. And mm-hmm. it's fun to see the builders come in and go, oh my gosh, look at this. You can't get this anymore. And they wax poetic about the lumber. And
yeah, the wood building practice actually happened mostly in the U.S. because there was such, again, the local material was wood and so readily available. And of course, they had come across this very green, full of trees place. And that was a lot easier to cut down and build
that would
from
be North America.
Yeah. Than to try and go make a whole bunch of bricks, right? So they could quickly and easily build houses from that. And so all these wood, you know, forest, the trees were so old, and so they were really sturdy and strong. And so nowadays they have forests that they grow to then cut wood from. Well, it has to have grown for so long in order to cut it, and it's still not quite as strong as the old growth, and there is a lot of information about that. The other thing was the dimensional lumber. And so back then, a 2x4 was actually 2 inches by 4 inches. That's another thing builders are always fascinated with when we go into old houses and find that.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I've known that because I've been working in the field for a long time, but mm-hmm. I didn't know all the reasoning behind why the term like a 2x4 isn't actually 2x4 and why. So reading about the lumber and the old growth lumber and then all
so
of that.
So what did they say?
I could read it to you, but basically it's about the shrinkage.
Okay.
It's all about shrinkage and exactly what you were just describing about the old growth being a certain level. And so mm-hmm. they called it a name. They named it. The nomenclature was a certain way. But then when they started with the new growth, they never changed the wording. So they still call it a 2x4, but it isn't 2x4.
Yeah. Well, it's always like such a big trick you have to learn.
Right.
Because also as you get to the taller ones, it's actually not by the half. It's by the quarter. So, yeah, very interesting stuff about wood. Concrete was something that kind of came about in kind of the 20s, 30s, and the idea of adding steel. And basically concrete is a mix of aggregates and paste, which is kind of water and Portland cement. And you have to get that mix correct. There's a certain percentage of all of that that goes into it. And there's something called the slump test that you have to do before you pour the concrete to make sure it's falling appropriately. So then when you pour, it's pouring the right way, and then it will harden the right way.
What is the slump test?
It's you take this kind of square and you pour a bunch of concrete into a pile, and it has to slump in a certain form. It's hard to describe in words, but there's a certain form it has to come out with in order before you can go pour the concrete. So in a lot of commercial buildings, you know, the architect is called out to verify that, or they take pictures and send it, and the engineers and everything, and residential, not so much. But.
So I found the answer to the question you asked earlier about, and this is really interesting. So changes in lumber sizes. Lumber size is described in two ways. Nominal lumber sizes refer to the actual dimension of the lumber before it's dried and milled. So that's the difference. Dimensional lumber sizes refers to the dimension of lumber after it has been dried and milled. That is, the size of the lumber when it's delivered to the job site. So they're calling it, they name it, the nomenclature is they name it as it is when it's before it's dried, and then, of course, it shrinks. I had to get back to that because I thought that was such an interesting thing to read because I never knew the reasoning behind the name. And it's funny, I never questioned it really, but it's kind of interesting.
I also thought it was just harder to get as much wood and it's just less expensive for the wood companies, but perhaps not. Perhaps it does have to do with because of the moisture content
and the
old
content.
Growth forests because they're so old, don't have as much moisture in them, which is cool. Very cool. So, yeah, so the concrete started, you know, I think we've talked about Frank Lloyd Wright at Mies van der Rohe and the Bauhaus and all those folks who started using concrete and with adding steel and how they could cantilever so far. And so that started, of course, that is such a main, I mean, that's a main staple of our building now. I mean, most foundations are concrete. Sometimes there's concrete walls like tilt panels, especially for warehouse buildings where they pour the concrete on the ground, a whole wall, and then they tilt it up. And sometimes you can then put a row of glass above it, and then, of course, you can add veneers to it, brick and whatever, but the main structure is the concrete. And, of course, there's also CMUs, concrete masonry units, which a lot of places use that
like
are
concrete
masonry units,
and that is a form that you purchase.
Big blocks are usually like 8 by 12 or so, and they have holes inside them. Mm-hmm. And so those are really great for hurricane areas. You'll find those a lot in Florida and a lot of the islands. And then you can apply stucco and brick to them. And the thing is, it's hard to rearrange your walls later with them. But
they really have a good
strength to withstand.
They kind of, do they breathe a little bit too? Do they have a little bit of porousness to them? Concrete in general, I know, does.
I mean,
it's a very porous
material.
Yeah.
And can withstand a lot of weather.
So I was also reading, as I was doing research for this, about how comments people make a lot. We hear people say, we don't build them like we used to, talking about homes. And, you know, there's a lot of different aspects of that. Some of it is the materials, like we were just talking about with the old growth and the different ways of building and what you can get. Now you can have a variety of materials. I mean, yes, it is harder to get maybe some exotic woods from South America here, but you can do it in a time. In the old days, you couldn't really do that. So that there's part of it is the materials have changed, and part of it is the labor market has changed. So just a side note that, you know, a lot of what I was reading is a lot of our ability to build has actually improved, but the trade of building has changed along with the material of building. And we used to have, you know, slave labor building the pyramids.
The pyramids.
Exactly. And who knows, maybe Stonehenge or whatever.
Yeah, they don't even know.
They don't even know. So that's just an interesting thing to think about when you're thinking about material changing. It's also labor changing. So we don't, there are some good and bad things that have come out of a lot of the new ways of building. And I know there's also, just as another little side note, it was interesting to read about the safety of the materials that you use, and then the methods and ways of building that makes use materials and methods of building that makes homes safer, more breathable, less, what do you call that when things burn? Less burnable. What's the word for that?
Fire rated.
Yes.
Fire retardant.
Yeah. Anyway, that was really interesting to learn about the materials and their scientific nature and how that affects the way that the choices people make for the materials they use in their
homes. Even if you think about plumbing, you know, we used to use copper, and then they went to PVC, and now there's PEX. And so there's all these different types of different materials that you do for all of your plumbing. And they even used to use clay tile for plumbing.
Yes, I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they keep evolving and making it better, which, so you could say over time, hopefully we've gotten better at our building practices, right?
Right. Ideally.
And so even though we walk in these old houses and say, oh, they're built so well.
Yeah.
That's kind of
also, we don't have to get into economics, but the tax structure has changed as well. So in the Gilded Age, they could afford to build and sort of have structure after structure.
Oh, yeah, and you used to get taxed on your windows.
Exactly. So it's
like
kind
in Charleston, you used to get taxed on how many windows face the street, which is why they all have side porches and the big elevation is down the side.
Right. And then because there wasn't a lot of taxing on, the Astors, for instance, they were able to do whatever they wanted with their additional cash. But that's a whole nother subject. we won't go into taxes.
And it does create some great architecture.
It does. That's true. We are grateful for that. That's for sure.
Kind of other building material is stucco, which we kind of just talked about, that you put on CMU walls. You can also put them on wood walls. And so that's still a pretty common practice. And again, like you were saying, the adobe structures, I mean, that gets used a lot in the, you know, kind of more the Southwest. I've had a stucco home. You constantly battle the cracks.
Yeah.
I would say it's a living material. You have to definitely make sure you can get your expansion joints in the right place. A lot of times I'm working on that when we're doing houses out of stuccos. We have to make sure we get them, you know, depending on the length of the building, how every often and where the windows are, we figure out how to make sure that, you know, is put in the right place to help work with the movement of the stucco. Stucco is made of Portland cement, lime sand, and water. And then it's kind of like a little thin layer of concrete on the outside, which is what can end up with the cracking. And it's usually a three-coat process. Now, they've come up with different other types of material. There's Dryvit, which is like this fake stucco thing that was put on a lot of buildings in the 90s. Basically, you could take a hammer and go up to it and hit it and break it. It was like this almost like styrofoam type stuff.
I've seen
stuff.
That. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still use it or not, but it was pretty common. I know it came about in the 90s. But, of course, I love the purest stuff of the true stucco with the metal lathe and everything. And then, of course, glass has come a long way, too. I mean, we used to have windows where we'd just have, like, a fabric covering over it, right?
You mean for the, on the interior?
No, like there wasn't glass. It was just opening, and we'd try to cover it up with shutters.
And I've done research on that before. Yes, they would just put, it's really interesting, they'll put bark from trees will be what is the covering. And then they would just take the bark out when they wanted the window open and put the bark in place. Or paper, thin cut bamboo.
So it was pretty exciting to come up with the idea of windows and glass.
Oh, and hides. They had hide window coverings. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. You could just roll that hide up. Still, the hair still on it to cover the window.
Since
this is probably the Vikings.
As a rug, it was on the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool.
And then we moved on to glass.
And then glass, they kind of, the earliest glass they found was in about 2000 BC, and it was like a bead for a necklace. So they started figuring out how you basically heat up all this sand. So it's basically like liquid sand and how they've come to make glass. And so, of course, they've come so much farther. There's the tempered glass, the annealed glass, the laminated glass, there's stained glass, there's bulletproof glass, there's plastic glass. Now we just have so many different things. And then there's coatings to put on it to help prevent heat gain and heat loss. So it's been, talk about getting better in our building technology. Glass has certainly come.
Definitely has.
Almost maybe the longest way. Hardy board was kind of a new one I thought we should bring up because it's used so much now. So we used to have wood siding.
Wait, I have a question.
What?
You may not know the answer, but is hardy board the manufacturer label name?
Yeah.
Or, okay. I was curious about that.
Cement board.
Right. Okay. Thank you for clarifying
that. Kind of cornered the market. The cement board, I was going to say, it's a cementitious wood product, so it's made up of cement and bits and pieces of wood and gobbledygook, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're very technical here.
And it, James Hardy kind of is the one who kind of came out big with the product in, I guess, maybe the late 80s, definitely in the 90s. And it's fireproof, fire rated. It's, you can paint it. You don't have to paint it again a long time. It doesn't rot. You can make it so it looks like wood. And we use it all the time because nobody really wants the maintenance of the true wood siding.
Yeah, so I find that it's mostly a maintenance conversation. It's a cost and a maintenance conversation. But the maintenance is really what trumps all because it's really difficult to maintain wood when and hardy. It's hard to beat.
The wood you have to paint so often in order to take care of it.
That occurs to me. Did you just mention Trex?
Not yet.
Okay. That's in your list. Because it's a composite material made of, as you technically said, gobbledygook.
It has a huge recycled content of plastic.
A lot of plastic.
All the plastic bags that we go put in that bin at the grocery store.
And Trex is a faux wood material. Trex also is a trade name.
Right.
There's a lot of different brands out there, but it's a material that can replace decking.
Right.
And be used for anything.
Forever.
And it actually has come a very long way in how it looks.
Yes.
It did used to look very
like a plastic bag.
Like a plastic bag. And now it's beautiful. It can look very much like wood. And it's hard to argue with it the better it gets.
Right. Yeah. I had thought about roofs. I mean, there's so many different roofs to talk about. Metal, which lasts, a good 50 years. And, of course, we see those on a whole bunch of old. It kind of had a new trend, I would say, starting in the 90s when everyone started to say, we like the way that looks. They'd see it on industrial buildings. And so people started putting it on houses and it was on barns. And so it still kept been around for still a long time, and I think they look nice.
Yeah, they look great. They last a long time.
And, of course, there's the asphalt shingle roof, which we're all commonly known about. It's the least expensive. And, of course, you can get different type of shingles and colors, and we're always looking at the color mix of that, right?
And that's come a long way, too. And it's kind of a science to figure that out, or at least when you're on the site. And you're looking at the shingles, and there are very subtle differences, little tiny granular differences. There's a little green in one, a little brown in another. And then you stand back from it. It takes on a whole different effect. It's the way it reflects light from the sky. And so that's a really interesting thing. If you haven't done that before, it's a fun process to kind of narrow
fun
down.
Process. It can be a little overwhelming.
It's a little overwhelming. It's kind of interesting to see. I find myself driving around neighborhoods looking at shingle roofs and thinking, and then trying to figure out what color that they have used, yeah. if it looks beautiful. And
you can also get, and they cost more, but like something that looks like a fake slate roof, but yes. it's made out of asphalt. So sometimes we've done that. Of course, there is the slate. There's also clay tile. And then with the clay tile, there's so many options. Now, that, again, is related to the local sand and clay and those colors. So sometimes we're wanting...
And that's what you would see on maybe a Spanish-style home.
Or French.
Or a French-style home. Texas Hill Country-style home.
There's, I mean, I think all over the world they mm-hmm. use clay tile roofs. You mm-hmm. see them everywhere.
Just so people know what we're talking about. Yeah. They're the ones that are curved. And are usually or often, well, that's not even, maybe
they're
not
kind
usually,
of in the reds,
tend
browns,
to be red,
oranges.
Brown.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. You can get them in white, too. So that, again, is related to the sand and local clay as far as the color. And then, of course, if you're doing that, you definitely have to make sure you design the roof framing appropriately to handle that load. Same thing with slate. Anything really heavy, you're always having to make sure you design that roof to accommodate that. And then there's flat roofs.
Yes.
Which those have varied so much over the years, and that's another technology that keeps going. Brad with LBR had mentioned another new one to us recently. So, you know, we've been using TPO and elastomeric, and it's almost like this big giant piece of rubber that you just snap all the way
over
around
the house,
all four
over
sides
the,
and don't want to puncture it. And so there's all, and then there's, you know, you're heating up all this tar and stuff and mopping it down on the roof. And so there's all these different ways to do the flat roof because, of course, that all came about with our modernist movement mm-hmm. in the 20s and 30s. And, of course, there's always the thatched roof. We
yes.
don't have those here. Those are kind of not so fire rated.
No, not at all, since they're grasses.
Yeah, and roof thatchers mm-hmm. are not as a trade that we see very often. But
yes.
my cousins have one in England. So it's always very interesting to me go crawling around inside their attic to look at it and see it.
What does it look like on the inside?
It looks just the same as the outside.
It's crazy.
And there's like a wire mesh netting mm-hmm. underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do still have a soffit board that runs along the bottom where it connects to the wall of the house.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I would love to see that in person.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Waiting for my invitation.
You're always invited. And then, I mean, we can start going inside the house.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much stuff inside.
For sure. And I think one thing I wanted to say before we kind of get into that is just why it's important, you know, circling back for in the interior and the exterior, why it's important. Because, you know, we know that in considering materials, you have to think about the acoustics of the material, especially
mm-hmm.
on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Does it absorb sound? Does it... how's it going to feel to be in a space and how those materials are going to affect the acoustics in that space? It affects wayfinding. I think materials in landscaping is a good way to explain that idea of wayfinding is, you know, when you're creating a landscape, for instance, and you want people to use a particular door or go a particular way or move through the yard in a particular way, maybe all you do is change the pathways or the material on the pathways. And so materials can call out ways to go in spaces. And also they'll delineate, sometimes materials will delineate rooms. For instance, if you have a space that maybe an open kitchen, because there are a lot of those out there, and the material of the kitchen floor, there's no wall there to delineate the difference. There's just a different tile that delineates the kitchen floor versus the wood floor,
mm-hmm.
which means now you have arrived at the living room because you have a wood floor there. And so and we've all probably seen that when you go in people's homes, sometimes the material of the entranceway is maybe a tile, but then right next to that is an inset of carpet floor or cork
right.
floor or wood floor.
Laundry
so,
room, isn't
yeah.
it?
So it's wayfinding, it's delineation of rooms, and it sets the mood. It can stimulate, you know, a sense of well-being if we relate really positively to the materials that make up the space.
Comfort.
Comfort mm-hmm. level. It affects your emotions. And these are not minor decisions. These are major decisions to make. You know, like an architect thinks about where the windows go so that they can think about where the when the sun comes up, if you're going to get sun in a room. Mm-hmm. The interior designer might think about how that room is going to when the person's going to spend time in that room, what the materials need to be in that space. So is it going to be a dark, quiet room that gets a dark material of on the floor or on the walls or maybe a dark ceiling? Or is it going to be a daytime room that mm-hmm. people spend time in during the day? And so that affects the materials that we choose. And then the feel of it, the tactile experience of the materials. And I even was reading a little bit about this and thinking about, too, the way houses smell, something we don't always want to think about, but we talk about it a lot in our meetings with clients and in making
really?
Decisions. Yeah, just yesterday we were talking with a client about their shoes. When they come in from the outside, where are they going to put their shoes? And is it going to, what can it be?
Off-gas.
It needs to off-gas. It needs to be in a space that has good breathing. And so that affects materials. What material? We put maybe a mesh over the shoe cubby so that the smells inside can come out. And so there's
maybe
a lot
you should put in a little vent fan.
Yes,
in there
a little vent fan. We've done that before.
And we do that for kitty litter boxes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then same thing for, one of my things about kitchens is making sure that they're well ventilated and they're in a space with good windows, and because you don't want those smells to really stick around for very long. And then thinking about the material of spaces and how their scale affects those moods. So, little tiles versus big tiles, big plank floors, big wide oak plank floors that people like, that sort of Scandinavian look that has mm-hmm. been a trend for a while, is going to feel very different than, a 3-inch solid oak, red oak floor that's, stained a warm tone. So all of these different material choices that we make really change the way that we feel about our spaces. And, I have a love of soapstone, which I'm sure you've all heard me talk about before if you've been listening. And part of what I love about the way that stone feels for a countertop what I love about that stone is the way that it feels to the touch and the way that it sounds when something hits it. It's a very quiet stone. It doesn't make a lot of clicking noises.
Yeah,
and so
I love soapstone as well.
I just think it's
beautiful. And it comes in so many different colors and varieties.
It does.
Right?
It does.
It can be more green or it can be more blue or it can be more black. It is so awesome. One thing I wanted to talk about that's one of Amity's enemies is gypsum board.
Yes.
It came out in about 1930.
Yes.
And it just took off, right?
So then I call that sheetrock because it is a sheet of pretend rock or gypboard, which is a shortened term for something. I don't know what.
Gypsum board.
Gypsum board. Yeah, mm-hmm. gypsum board. Yeah. And it's a very efficient a way to build and a more affordable way to build. It's better
it's
than
also fire rated.
Yeah.
And then
mm-hmm.
you can add more fire resistance materials to it, which is what they do in commercial for mm-hmm. it. They used to have shiplap on the inside of old houses, right? And then you would cover it up with what, Amity?
Paint.
No, didn't
ship
they?
Lap.
I thought that they would like have like this
yes,
horse
of course.
Hair type.
Yes,
stuff
you're
on
right.
There.
Sorry.
And
fell off.
Like really cool old
that's
fabrics.
Right. Yeah,
right?
There would be almost it's almost like a canvas material. And it's interesting so this gets me really excited.
I knew it would.
Before there were standards for these things, you don't know what you're going to find in some of these old houses. Mm-hmm. You open up, there's the lathe, and then there's the lime that they use to kind of be the glue to hold everything together. And maybe there's like a lime. We found once a lime pit on the site of the house mm-hmm. we were working on where they had dug up their own lime to put on the walls. Mm-hmm. And then horsehair, yes, and sometimes hay and sometimes old fabrics. Yes, that's correct. Like something almost like a canvas material.
Like a muslin almost.
Muslin,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's true. That's really interesting.
And so now we have really awesome wall coverings and sometimes fabric wall coverings, right?
Yeah, and Diane was kind of picking on me a little bit there about my chipboard thing, but I feel like sheetrock and chipboard is the enemy, and I always joke about that. We need to cover it up because it's, to me, a building material, not a finished material.
Right.
So what goes on top of it? Mm-hmm. So I did find some interesting things, too, I wanted to mention about, you know, people are always thinking of ways to make their home feel more expensive and lavish looking without having to spend necessarily on it. And so a couple of ways to do that are, you know, using reclaimed wood, which has been and still is a pretty popular material. And it looks kind of rich and beautiful. It has character. And there are faux reclaimed woods. There are real reclaimed woods. And both of those tend to be very popular still. I'm amazed at how they've persisted. For a while, it was just beams,
so
right, Diane?
It must be something about the mood and the comfort level and all those things you were talking about.
Yeah, and I think reclaimed wood floors or a reclaimed wood floor look became really popular for a while.
Yes.
It's an immediate infusion of history, an immediate way that you can feel like your home has got some character and some age to it, but it doesn't. It's an engineered floor, which of course works really well. Also, using used bricks, just like reclaimed bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Again, same thing. It's character.
Yeah,
plugged right
sell,
in.
Like old Chicago brick is one of the famous like selling of old reclaimed bricks is, you know, from old buildings that they've torn down, and you can get all these great bricks with all this history of paint colors and
tells a story.
There was blackness of fire that was there or something.
Yeah. So corrugated metal too has been less so.
Total 90s product. I don't know how many buildings I put that on when I was, because that was in my years of drafting and commercial architecture.
Yeah, that's true. Corrugated metal was a thing.
And the one thing about corrugated metal is it, you know, with the heat and cold, you'll be in a building and all of a sudden you'll hear bing. And it's because the metal just snapped.
That's so funny.
We really don't use. I don't see
it anymore.
We don't use as much corrugated metal. What they use now is they do use metal panels, and there's a plethora of really awesome metal panels that are being used in mostly the commercial architecture. Now, sometimes we'll use something like copper and things on our residential houses. Mm-hmm. Now, there is multifamily housing that also uses metal paneling that looks really nice.
Yeah, and I think you're right to bring up the metal thing for interiors, too. We've seen a resurgence of people wanting copper and metal sheathing and brass backsplashes. And it just adds interest and character and a little bit of
reflection.
There
are so many more metals now being used inside houses. And we particularly see that in the hardware cabinet.
Yes.
And door hardware and bathroom, you know, towel bars and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And also appliances.
Yes, absolutely.
Multiple different finishes.
Different
appliances.
Finishes for, you can get copper looking
appliances. I have
appliances.
Copper handles on my stove.
So Diane was mentioning my love of / hate of chipboard and sheetrock. But I know one of your points of contention is stone veneer, lick and stick.
Oh, yeah.
Lick and stick stone. So I'm being,
it.
It can be done.
I'd rather see the chipboard.
So what that is in talking about how to make your home look richer and more characterful, they sell kind of cut stone that's thinner. It's like they take a stone and they cut the face off of it and they add a tile backing, and then you can slap it up on your wall and pretend that your wall is actually a stone wall. And we're joking a little bit. It can be done very well, but yes, it can be done very poorly, and then everybody feels very sad.
Now, we can't not talk about one of your favorites.
Cork.
Oh, yeah, that's one, too. I was thinking of something else. I think of wood paneling.
Oh, yes. Yes, all walls should be paneled. Yeah, I love wood paneling.
I mean, it looks gorgeous. We just did a house where we added wood paneling to the foyer and then wrapped it around into the breakfast area. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, shouldn't we have taken it the rest of the way around the living room?
Absolutely.
I mean, it just looks so great, right?
I love it.
What is it? Why does it make it feel so great?
Well, I think it sounds better. I think it actually absorbs sound differently. It costs more. So a lot of things that just cost more are Although better for a reason.
If you paint it, you can use MDF material.
That's true. Yeah, it can look like
less.
It can look like.
But
yeah,
it is also the labor to put it up.
It's true. It doesn't have to be stained and look like sort of 1960s or 70s wallboard. It can be painted. It can be any color you want. But it always breaks my heart when people tear their paneling out in favor of a cheaper material like chipboard. It breaks my heart.
It really hurts.
Yeah. But one of my favorite materials, which I've talked about many times, and I think we'll wrap with this. We're at the end of our season.
You can see we're so excited.
Is cork.
About
yes.
Cork.
Is
yeah.
cork. Cork material. And actually, we have Diane and I have a client now. We're putting cork up on the walls of the office for this room. And
I keep checking every time I'm there.
I know it's not up yet.
Yeah.
But it's so beautiful and rich looking. And it's so funny. Everybody got so into Zoom for so long. And it looks really good on Zoom if you want a good
background for your meetings.
It
has so much character.
Yeah. Yeah, well, okay. I think everybody sees we really love materials. Thank you so much for listening today, and see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Design Oracles. And if you like the show or learned something new, please give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you are listening on. Follow us on Instagram at Design Oracles, and you can also find more information at our website, designoracles.com.